Blog Talk Radio.
Pour yourself a cup of tea, put your feet up, and relax. Show host Randy Fine, narcissistic abuse expert, compassionate counselor for clients worldwide, and author of the groundbreaking new book, Close Encounters of the Worst Kind, invites you into her sanctuary, a place where your emotional, physical, and spiritual well-being are all that matters. Time to Heal is a fundraising single written and performed by Johnny Z for the Amy Winehouse Foundation. For more information, please go to johnnymusic.com, johnnymusic.com. And now, it's time to meet Randy, show host of the podcast enjoyed by fans around the globe, A Fine Time for Healing.
Good morning. Thank you for tuning in to listen to A Fine Time for Healing. This is your show host, Randy Fine. Today, let me ask you a few questions first. Are you ready to eradicate your pain and suffering? Are you ready to be empowered to magnify your effectiveness in all areas of your life? And are you ready to be able to inundate your being with the most effervescent bliss ever relished? Are you ready to find your higher purpose? Well, that sounds like a high order, but it's not really such a high order because we're going to talk with my special guest today, Vishnu Swami, who is more commonly known as the Maverick Monk. He is here to share his 5,000-year-old based spiritual wisdom, give you a glimpse of how he has decoded the mastery of Dharma in a simple and easy way, and talk about his book, Eternal Dharma, How to Find Spiritual Evolution Through Surrender and Embrace Your True Life's True Purpose. Vishnu was raised in a monastery in India from the age of 11 and was sent into the world to teach the wisdom of the Vedas everywhere, from Bengali villages to American cities. He was bestowed the honor of becoming the youngest Swami ever at the age of 23 by one of the world's greatest Bhakti Yoga masters. He is a youthful, respected personal growth and spiritual leader who has been featured on TV and radio, in newspapers internationally, and in an award-winning spiritual documentary. His true joy at communion with the divine spills over into every page of his book, and his deep desire to make that accessible to all permeates the book with love for his readers. And I know you're very excited to meet him and hear what he has to say, so let me introduce my special guest to you. Good morning, Vishnu.
Good morning.
Thank you for being my guest today. It's wonderful to have you.
I am excited. I'm excited.
Well, that's good to know. We're excited to have you. So tell us a little bit about your background and how you got to the point that you are in your life now.
Well, I guess the real significant thing happened when I was 11 years old and I went to live in a monastery in India. I was with my parents. They were into spiritual things, and we went for a pilgrimage to India to see these holy places and the whole, it's like a really special, different place, India. And there was a monastery there, and it was just so beautiful and attractive. And I stayed there for one day, and then I stayed there for 1 week, and then 3 months, and then my parents went back, and I stayed there for 6 months and 1 year, and and I became a monk and lived in a monastery, and it was amazing. And that really kind of changed my life from, you know, living an almost normal Western life and then being in a monastery in India that had mud huts and an elephant and off, you know, near the villages of Ganga. So I kind of got this multicultural perspective and really got an opportunity to see life from different angles and a different type of insight. And then I traveled with my guru, and then now I teach. And so
okay.
That's a little bit about me.
Okay, great. What brought you to the United States?
Well, I'm American. My father's American, even though I was born in Spain. But I used to travel with my guru. I assisted him for some time, and we taught all over the world. And then he when I was 23, he made me the Swami, like you mentioned, the world's youngest Swami, and sent me teaching separately. So I used to go teach in different yoga studios and different communities and groups around the world. But I'm called the Maverick Monk because what I've experienced is a lot of people, when they come on the spiritual path, they say the world is bad, money is bad, relationships are bad, just disappear, and they kind of want to do kind of what I did, like disappear and go off into some cave in the Himalayas and meditate and detach themselves from the world. But I disagree with that. I say that real spirituality is not about dropping off of the face of the earth, but it's about dropping back to earth. How do we practically align our practical lives and our spiritual lives? So I'm a little bit contrarian or contradictory to a lot of, normal spiritual practices.
Okay. But that's so much more applicable to the life we live here, especially in America. So where it's a very active, stimulating kind of life, and we really can't go off and do this. But I agree with you. I don't believe that we have to. I believe that we can practice it in our everyday life, in our every moment. So you titled your book Eternal Dharma. What is Dharma, first of all, and then let's talk about Eternal Dharma.
Okay, Dharma is a really fun concept. It's the kind of base concept of all the thousands of years of wisdom, of yoga, of India, of Ayurveda, Eastern wisdom. It all revolves around this one concept. And it's really simple once you get it. Dharma means nature. Dharma means inherent function. It means constitutional nature. Dharma is a duty. It's a natural inclination. It's an inspiration. It's basically who you are, who you're meant to be, or the concept doesn't even just apply to you as a person, but basically it's the core nature, inherent function of anything, any object, any person. Like I'm looking at a microphone right now. It has a dharma. Its purpose is to capture sound and turn it into digital sounds. It's a digital microphone, and that's what it does. That's its purpose. If I use it to crack open walnuts, It could work, but it's not its nature. It's not what it's meant to be. It's not its dharma. So when we find out about our dharma, it's, okay, why do I exist? What is my purpose? And how do I act according to my dharma? Because then life becomes easy and we get greater results. And so much, we can't be happy unless we live in our dharma.
Okay. So when people say, am I walking my true path? That's kind of another way of saying, am I in my dharma, right?
You could say that, yes, but not necessarily. Yeah, I guess you can say that. If you're in your dharma, you'll be evolving on your spiritual evolution, even if you're not sometimes also. But I understand that our life is like a journey. We have a path, and it's the purpose of it is to develop a passionate, loving connection with the divine, and everything in the universe, everything in existence is there to lead us on that journey. Now, when we align, because that's our dharma, that's our highest eternal nature to do that. So then when we're walking our true path, then we are expressing our dharma more. And so they go hand in hand, maybe slight differences, I would say. But yeah.
Okay. Okay. So in your book, in the beginning of your book, you talk about three basic heart pains that we are... deep down, well, let me let you explain them. What are the three basic heart pains?
There's a lot of pains in the world. One thing is that we just suffer a lot in this world. By nature, we're always looking for happiness. We're always looking for joy. We're always looking for kind of satisfaction. But the thing is that oftentimes we feel so much pain because the nature of our being is to always be connected. We always want to be connected. We always want to feel happy. We always want to feel loved and connected. And the fact is that life can be tough. Life can be difficult. We can lose our jobs. We can have breakups and go through pain. So I think just one of the pains is the aggregate of the total pains of life. And sometimes the pains of life just added up together is a heck of a lot worse than we bargain for or that we want. So basically, life sometimes is painful. Life hurts, you know? And then another thing that I think people miss or they don't connect with is that we think, is this it? Life, there should be something more to it. I mean, we live in this world. It's beautiful. It's amazing. But shouldn't there be something more? Isn't there some greater purpose? Isn't there some greater reason, some greater meaning? Isn't there, are we just meant to come here, be born, live a little, get sick, get old, and then die? Is that just all that's life about? Is it just limited to the small number of years that we have in this life? Is it just, I mean, life sometimes can be so rudimentary or so mundane or just so monotonous or normal. And I say that the miracle of life is so beautiful and amazing that there has to be something more than just day-to-day living. There has to be something more and in-depth. And I think a lot of people, when they're getting absorbed in the happenings of life, they're missing that there is something more. There is that depth. Yeah, and I think that oftentimes, I wrote an article actually, about fear. People feel a lot of fear. A lot of time. And the fear, as described in the thousands of years of wisdom of India, is that when we're absorbed in something which is not real, when we have a misidentification with the body, a misidentification with the mind, then inherent there's this fear, there's this insecurity, there's this security for our survival, for our so many different types of fear. Those are some pains that we have in life, but I'm sure there's a lot more.
That's true. That's true. Yes, there is a lot of fear. Many people live their life out of fear, not love. And that just makes everything so much more difficult. So you have studied the wisdom of the ancients, which is Veda. And Veda, you say, equals knowledge. So can you explain to us what exactly Veda is in terms of, you know, how it was compiled and how it applies to today?
I can tell you read my book. You're asking all the right questions, or at least part of it.
Yes.
So some radio shows don't do that. So Veda, the
I always do. I always do, Vishnu. I want to represent my guests in the very best possible way.
Beautiful. So Veda literally means knowledge, but it's not just intellectual knowledge. It's not information, data that you can, like in the Matrix, just download into your brain or put on a hard drive on a computer. It's not just, how do you say, dry information. Veda literally means realized knowledge, experiential knowledge, knowledge that's an integral, inherent part of your being. For example, you can have knowledge of a mango, and you know that it's a fruit that grows in a tropical climate, and it's sweet and has this pH and chemical composition, or you can eat the mango. And if you eat the mango, then you have realized knowledge or, real experience of the mango. So what's understood with the concept of Veda is that knowledge by nature is eternal. And a lot of what the ancients can do, not just ancients, also modern people, but when you advance spiritually, you can tune into kind of this pulsating knowledge of the universe. You can experience things spiritually and have this deep knowledge. And then you know what to do. That's kind of often known as the guru that's inside of the heart that's guiding us about what to do, what not to do. And anyway, so basically what I'm saying is that there's an eternal knowledge that's not just information, that's a realized knowledge that exists throughout existence. And when someone's spiritually advanced, they can tune into that knowledge, and a lot of people have done that throughout history, and they've channeled that and written that in the form of books. If you look in many spiritual traditions, a lot of their sacred texts, where there was some prophet or saint or guru, and they would go into meditation, and then they would channel and they would write what naturally came forth. In other words, they'd be transcribing the Vedic wisdom. So that's Veda, and through meditation practices and spiritual practices, you can tune into that as well. But when we're not so good at that, which is probably the case of most of us here on this call, right? Then there's the books that other people who tune into Veda have written down. And historically, if you say when people speak about the Vedas, they're speaking about the body of texts from India, which are 5,000 years to 7,000 years old historically. But then if you look what's written in them, they're understood to be even more ancient than that. And then yoga is based on that. Yoga is like 5% of the Vedic knowledge. And in the West, now it's like, oh, yoga is so big. And I'm like, yes, it's big, it's good. But that's only 5% of what's there in the Vedas. There's so much more that explains about acupuncture actually was originated in Vedas. There's a couple cool books that explain that very nice. But there's like health systems, there's architectural systems, there is, and more importantly, there's spiritual system, because all of Veda is striving for dharma. How do we use ourselves? How do we use the world? How do we understand God? All in its inherent constitutional nature, in its function, and how do we align with that so things can naturally happen in an easier way, and we can progress to greater joy.
So I tend to get like deep into this kind of stuff, you know, and my mind goes into all kinds of directions. But my question is that are these principles that are strictly for incarnation, or are they the principles that go beyond our incarnation into when we're souls and spiritual bodies, strictly spiritual bodies?
Okay. So that's it. You brought up a lot of concepts here. Now we're going to have some fun. Let's roll up our sleeves.
I know.
Yeah. So when speaking about incarnation, we're speaking about reincarnation. We're speaking, inherent in your question is the idea of a dualistic idea, which I agree with, and the Vedas, thousands of years of India support, is that there's a difference between our body and the difference between our soul. In other words, we are the conscious spark, that living entity, that being that is having the experience that is eternal by nature, and it can't be destroyed. It doesn't die when the body dies, and it lives on. And then we have our car, we have our vehicle, which is our body made of earth, water, fire, air, and we have our mind, we've got our intelligence, and every 7 years, every cell of the body changes, and after some time, our body will also die and be gone, but the soul will live on. And what's understood with reincarnation is that then that soul goes and moves on, takes on another body, and another body, and another body. And in each body that we take on, we're learning, we're growing, we're evolving spiritually to the point of when we, how do you say, become liberated from the suffering of this world, liberated, because the bodies by nature, there's so much pain. One example we give is your little finger. How much pleasure can your little finger give you? You can massage it. You can put it in a cup of water. You can lick it. You can, I mean, what else can you do for a little finger? You can, like, blow it or something. I mean, there's not much, how do you say, fun that the tip of your finger can give you. But how much pain can it give you? You can needles, burning, smashing. I mean, there's the pains and so much pain your little finger can give you. So it can give you a lot more pain than it can give pleasure. So the idea behind that is that our bodies, by nature, aren't the happiest place for us to be, for us to reside in, and that we can reside as the soul, which exists beyond this body, and when we get liberated, when we connect with the divine, then we can not be limited by our body, and we can identify with our true self instead of misidentifying with the body. So your question, which is it's a good question, is when we're speaking about dharma, when we're speaking about our core spiritual purpose, about who we are, then there's dharma is also, it's a big concept. I wrote a book on it. You can find it on maverickmonk.com, Eternal Dharma. It's that dharma is also your duty in this world. If that's who you are, then that's what you're meant to do. If you're a policeman, then your job is to police, is to protect. If you're a business person, your job is to conduct business transactions. So that's kind of inherent in your dharma. So when you say, okay, if I have a purpose, if I'm a mother and it's my duty to take care of my child, then is my taking care of my child, that's my dharma, that's my duty, but is that part of my eternal duty? Is that related to the soul or is that related to the body? What's the difference? And the truth is that there are two types of dharmas. There's an eternal dharma and there's a temporary dharma. And the eternal dharma is that which is related to the soul, which has nothing to do with the body. Regardless of whatever body you're in or not in, that's eternal. That's your relationship with the divine. That's your need to love. That's your need to serve, your need to connect. And that's the eternal dharma. And it's individual. Everyone has a unique dharma. So how we love, how we connect, that's where the beauty comes out. Then the next thing is the temporary dharma. When we're in this body, the body also has a dharma. The body also has a nature. And that dharma exists only for the time being of that body. An example can be of being a mother, is that before you have a child, you don't have the duty of being a mother, of taking care of your children, of the things that come with being a mother. But once you're a mother, you have a certain duty to your children. And so that dharma didn't exist before, but it exists for a specific period of time. So really the journey of life is understanding both of our dharmas. Because our temporary dharma, when we practice that properly, it is very helpful and it guides us to inspire and live our eternal dharma. They work hand in hand. So basically, some dharmas for temporary, who are we in this body, what is our purpose in life? And a lot of people, when they talk about their life purpose, that's what they're speaking about. And then there's our eternal dharma, which is beyond this body, beyond our nature.
Okay. So, well, that's a very good explanation. That really does clear it up for me. Yeah. And actually, I'm as I'm looking through your book, you know, I'm actually on the page of temporary dharmas. And you talk about that there's a harmful temporary dharma. What is that about?
Okay. So dharma, if you look at it deeper, just means inherent function. Everything has a dharma. Like we said, the microphone has a dharma, a pen has a dharma, a rock has a dharma, water has a dharma, the sky has a dharma, everything has a dharma. And later on in the book, I explain, okay, how do you use the dharma of the world around you? How do you align, how do you use things according to their dharma to make life a lot easier so you can be effective, so you can make more money, so you can have better relationships, so you can be healthier and in a very personal growth type of way. But so what a temporary dharma is, or a harmful temporary dharma, is when something's nature appears to change and when you use it according to that. I'll be specific. Let's say water, for example. The nature of water when it's not in an unnatural condition is to be wet. If it is to take the shape of its container, it is to flow, and that's just what water is. That's its nature, and it's happy when it's acting according to its nature, when it's living its dharma. Now, if you take that water and you stick it in a freezer, then that nature changes. It appears to change. It becomes hard. It becomes cold. It doesn't take the shape of its container. So it seems that now its dharma is different. Now, if you go to the North Pole or you go somewhere, then water is always like that. And it's always ice. It always seems to be hard. And so its dharma has changed. But that's not its true dharma. It's a temporary dharma. It's only because of the unnatural situation, and it's harmful because it's not its true dharma. It's not a natural expression of what it really is. So what does that matter to us? Is that when we're living our dharma, we're happy. We're in alignment with the universe. We're acting according to who we are. We're living our fullest, highest, best selves. We're most effective, most powerful. We're connected. We're on it. When we're living and being and acting according to a dharma. And pain and suffering comes when we go against nature. When we go against dharma, then that's when things start to suck. You know, that's when things get messed up and they hurt. But we feel pain so much and so often, like we were talking in the beginning in life, is because by being in this world, it's kind of been like a freezer and influenced us, and we acting against our nature a lot of the time. Our true nature, like water being fluid and wet, you know, our true nature of who we really are, of selfless, passionate love with the divine, is often hidden, is often lost, and then we have a nature, and then we live in a world where it's dog-eat-dog, where we want to control and dominate other people, and we want to, everything is selfish, and everything's used for our own personal ends, and suffering comes from that. So that's a little something about a harmful temporary dharma that we want to avoid.
And why do we need to suffer? Why are we here to suffer?
Oh, because it's such a beautiful blessing. the suffering, and I'll explain that in a little bit more detail. Suffering, yeah. If there was no suffering, there would be no joy. If there was suffering, there would be no pleasure. If there was no pain, there can't be pleasure. Because they go two sides. If you look at things, like let's say you were God, and you were creating all of existence, and you made everything all the one, everything all the same, all bland. Even if it was the best thing ever, it's just normal, and it's bland because there's nothing to, how do you say, contrast it to, nothing to compare it to. Let's say someone was born a baby and all they ever ate was apple pie. And they just had apple pie and they never ate anything else in their entire life. And it was just apple pie, it was just apple pie, it was just apple pie. It was all the same, right? Then that apple pie wouldn't be special. It wouldn't be yummy. It wouldn't be, wow, it's apple pie. It would just be bland and boring and normal. So the notion of suffering has to exist in existence for there to be contrast to what is pleasure, what is joy. So pleasure and pain, they're like two sides of the same coin. But that doesn't always sound inspiring because you're like, well, I like the pleasure, but I also don't want to suffer. You know, pain is also not cool. But there's different types of suffering in the world. There's different types of pain, and most of the pain that we have in this world is also not necessarily helpful for us. It's not that other side of the coin, like I was just explaining. The suffering that's outside the other side of the coin, like let's say there's spiritual transcendental love and connection with the divine, the other side of that how to say passionate enlightenment, which I call, is the heart's longing to connect with the divine, and that suffering hurts. But in that suffering there's a pleasure in that suffering when you're crying and pining for the divine, and there's so much beautiful poetry and history that expresses that feeling. But then the suffering in this world, when we stub our toe, I was just swimming in the ocean the other day and I cut my nose on the coral and I had to get 6 stitches. And, you know, that kind of suffering, that's not the same type of suffering that I was just describing as the other side of the divine. That type of suffering is also there for a specific purpose and is also very helpful, is that when we look into Dharma, when we look into our nature of who we are, a temporary Dharma, eternal Dharma, if we were to boil it down in an oversimplified essence, is that our eternal Dharma is to be selfless, is to serve in selfless love, and our harmful temporary Dharma, the things that's messing us up, is when we have what I call God syndrome, where we want to take everything and enjoy it and dominate it and make it serve us. We want to be the center of attention and have everything gratify us, and we're selfish. So this selfishness. So what happens is there's the law of karma in the world where every action has a reaction. So when we live against our dharma and we act, against our core, our spiritual nature, and we do things selfishly and we try to dominate and we try to control, oftentimes that generates a negative karma. Every action has a reaction. So when we're doing an action which is a wrong action because it's not our truest, highest dharma, the reaction that comes from that oftentimes leads to suffering, leads to pain. So it's kind of the law of karma is like a mechanism in this world. If I punch someone else in the face, my face gets punched. If I do something which is against my dharma, if I'm not living in pure love, then pain and suffering comes. And then eventually we think, oh, maybe I'm not going to do that anymore, you know? Maybe I'm not going to... And it's there to lead us to really start inquiring about why we exist. Because if we never felt pain, we'd probably never ask about the divine, never ask about God, never ask about life's purpose, never ask who am I, why am I here. So it's to lead us to ask those questions so we can choose to follow that path.
That's so true. You know, for me, when I believed that I was in control of everything that happened, that's when my life wasn't working. It's when I relinquished control and realized that there's that there is spiritual guidance out there that is there to help me at all times. That's when things began to go better in my life. So our nature is to hear, when we're here, is to feel like we have to control. But really, life is much easier when we don't. What is your opinion on that?
The idea that we can control is just crazy mind babble. It's impossible. Can you control what the cells do inside your body? One of our gurus used to say, how many hairs do you have on your head? We don't even know how many hair strands we have on our head, and we think we're going to control our body, we're going to control the world. Our ability to control is so limited. It's just like if we were just a few, how to say, degrees closer to the sun, we'd be completely singed. If we were a few degrees away from it, we'd be a huge ice cube in the sky. We live in perfect ecosystems. I mean, the amount of control that we have is so limited compared to what there is in existence. We don't even understand one atom of our fingernails. We can't control our fingernail growth. We're so limited. So the idea that we can control everything that temporary dharma, that harmful dharma, is that illusion that we think we're God, we know everything, we can control everything. It's just ego. It's not true. There are some things and there are power, and we act according to dharma. We have access to great power. But that's different than just trying to control things, because we can't. We totally can't. Anyone who's lived a little bit knows that, right? We can't
control things. That's right. And
you know,
when life gets really tough, when there aren't answers, and we push so hard to try to find them, it's always best, I think, to take the other approach and to let that go, and trust and have faith and those kind of things. And I believe that often we are pushed to our limits, because that's really what this is about. It's about us acknowledging the spiritual aspect of who we are, and we wouldn't pay attention to that, like you said, if we didn't have these times where we are brought to our knees.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
Very true.
And there's in the later section of my book, I speak about Paramatma, which is basically the idea that everything does exist for a reason and a purpose. There's a pulsating desire throughout existence. In other words, God, this divine, has a plan for you, has a plan for everyone and everything and every atom in this world. And instead of trying to just dominate and control and think we own and control everything, which is total illusion, right, if we can learn how to tune into that pulsating desire of the divine and act according to that, then we can have immense power. Then we can know what to do, when to do it, how to do it, and life just flows completely naturally. And so really our dharma is to find that, you know, and then our is to surrender to that higher power, to that higher kind of guidance that falls through us, that flows through us, and then we have greater power, then we have greater efficacy. And it's not, so a lot of times when we talk about surrendering, people think that's a negative thing, that's a bad thing, that means you're going to have no power, that means you're going to have no control. And it's like, no, you have more control, you have more power. And it's kind of like in martial arts, if you're all tensed up, you can't really fight. But when I'm doing jiu-jitsu, the more relaxed I am and just feeling what needs to happen and more in tune and more flowing with the sparring, then it's much more powerful. I have more chance of defeating my opponent. In the same way of living life, you've kind of got to relax, surrender, let the divine guide you, and then things happen much more powerfully.
Beautifully said. I know that you can't really explain this in 2 minutes, but what is God? I mean, people always say, is there a God? Is it an entity? Is it a source? What do you believe God is?
What do I believe? Yes, beautiful subject. It's a touchy subject, because that's when people get into religion and they say, my God's better
yes.
than your God. And then they
in
kill
a
each
non,
other.
Yes, in a
and,
non-religious
yeah.
way. Mm-hmm.
And I, yeah, what the Vedas tell us, thousands of years of wisdom, is that all of the intellectuals and smart people in history have just been trying to understand the one undivisible supreme absolute truth. And the conclusions that they have come to is threefold. There's for each of these three ways of understanding the divine, there are entire religions and cultures and ceremonies and everything to understand God in these three ways. So the first way of understanding God is the concept of Brahma. I also explained this in the last chapters of my book, Eternal Dharma, on maverickmonk.com. So there's the Brahman, which is the idea that God exists everywhere. inside of everything, outside of everything. God is all pervasive. Really, everything is just a transformation of the same energy. If you look, what separates my finger from this table, if you go microscopically and look deeply and deeply and deeply, then really the molecules, there's no clear division where my finger ends, where the air starts, and where the table starts. Where the table starts, it's actually all one. And you hear a lot of people say that we're all one, everything is all one, everything is the same. And when we kind of realize that everything is a transformation of that same energy, then everything is God in a sense. And everything, and enlightenment is when you meditate and just and you zone out and you kind of merge with the totality of everything. And by doing that, then pain is destroyed, suffering is destroyed, and you're just happy in being connected. And it's and individuality is lost in that. So Buddhism largely follows that, parts of Hinduism, lots of different other religions have this impersonal idea of kind of like the all-pervasive white light as God, as the divine. And that, what I describe, is the first stage, or the abridged understanding of the divine. And then the next stage of understanding is that behind this white light, behind this kind of just everything all being one, is there is a little bit of a shape. There is a little something, there is a pulsating, I was speaking about this before, a pulsating desire that exists inside of everything. Okay, everything is all one, but still, then why has it taken the shape of planets and universes and doors and chairs? And why has this one energy, which everything is and everything comes from and everything is from, why does it exist? It's because there's some kind of supreme will, there's some higher meaning, there's some higher purpose, there's some reason to it all. And that reason is that there's Paramatma. We don't know who it is, we don't know what it really does, we don't know if it's a he or a she, what it is, but there's someone that has a plan and that has a desire, and the universe moves according to that. And that's the concept of the super soul, or Paramatma, means the soul of the soul. And the ancients say that it's like God lives inside of every atom, outside of every atom, is inside your heart. And that oftentimes we come in the world, we feel alone, but really we're not, because God is there inside of our heart. If we just turn to look, then we can tune into that Paramatma. So that's following intuition and kind of transcendental guidance, and that's what we spoke about that a little bit before. Then the third understanding of the divine is the concept of God as a person. That idea says it's really cool to have kids. It's really cool to have lovers. It's really cool to have family and friends. And God, being the source of everything, can also have that. God can also have a name, form, qualities, pastimes. God can. There's so much beauty in this world that originated in God. So God is the most beautiful person in existence. And that's the idea that God is a person that has a transcendental realm where you can love and have a passionate relationship with, just like you can have with families and friends and lovers, but to a much greater, much more beautiful degree. And because God is unlimited, they can have millions and millions of different forms. And so there's many different religions that try to connect with God as a person. Like in the Quran, it says, "Inha khalaqa min surati." In the Bible, it says, God created man after his own image. And it's a human form. And really, these three concepts of the divine, they all exist, how to say, harmoniously. It's all the same person expressing it in different ways. And according to our spiritual path and our spiritual evolution, we connect with God in a different way. And generally, the way that it's set up for our spiritual evolution is that first we connect with the impersonal kind of oneness with everything, and then we can begin to see a divine purpose behind it, and then we can know God as the supremely sweet person that has known us and that we know as our family.
Well, that's something to really ponder. That's something to really meditate on, because that's a lot of information. And it still leaves it open for interpretation and concept, you know, because, yeah, it's not, there's nothing concrete about, you know, what God is. So, yeah, I guess it just leaves us to contemplate it.
There are concrete things about what God is. It's just a much more vast reality than just a simplistic idea. But what is concrete is God is the origin of everything. Everything comes from God, and everything exists for God. What is concrete is God is the supremely powerful, right?
Okay.
And
yes.
What I would say is also concrete is God's a nice guy, right? That's beautiful and that's sweet. Sometimes you don't feel it that way, but that's another discussion.
Yeah. You know, I was I was sitting in synagogue the other day. I went to a bar mitzvah and I was reading the text, and I was so appalled. And I happen to be Jewish, but I was so appalled at what I was reading because it was talking about God being so angry and punishing people. And I thought to myself, oh no, that's not true. That's just not true.
Right.
God is loving,
that's
you know. And it really bothered me. but anyway, we are running out of time. But to my listeners, we are talking to Vishnu Swami, who's also known as Maverick Monk. We're discussing his book, Eternal Dharma, How to Find Spiritual Evolution Through Surrender and Embrace Your Life's True Purpose. Vishnu, before we close the show, you did mention your website. What is that again? Can you say it again?
It's maverickmonk.com. And there's links to the books there. Otherwise, you can get it in Barnes & Nobles across the country. But maverickmonk.com.
Okay. And this is a really wonderful book. Really, you know, I do counseling, and a lot of people, sometimes there just aren't answers to some of life's problems. And I really believe that if you can, you know, I would recommend this book, Eternal Dharma, because it gives you a different perspective, takes you out of the nitty-gritty of your problems and gives you a different perspective to help you deal with life. So it's really a wonderful book. So thank you, Vishnu, for writing this book and also for being my guest today and explaining these incredible concepts to me and to my listeners.
Thank you. Thank you. I hope everyone gets the book because we only scratched the surface. There's so much more beauty in it. You know, there's so much more practical. A lot of what we were talked about was very in the theoretical realm, which is nice, which is important. But then there's also just like practical questions. So how do I do this if I lose my job? Like, what do I do so that I can, you know, get rid of that pain and be more effective? How can I live my life? How can I relate with my family, my friends? How can I have better relationships, have better sex? How can I, you know, run my business according to spiritual principles to make more money? And we also get into that in the book.
Right. And there's a lot of quick tips and contemplations throughout the book to help you to do those things. So he explains it, and then he gives you contemplations and tips on how to go about doing these things. So anyway, wonderful book. Congratulations. I wish you great success on the book. And thanks again for being my wonderful, wonderful guest. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye. Have a wonderful day. So we are out of time for today, but if you have any comments or questions about today's show, you can email me at loveyourlife@randygfine.com. That's RANDIGFINE.com. My website is also randygfine.com. You can go there, just read hundreds of articles that I've written over the years, and also there's many shows for you to listen to going back to, I believe, 2009. So I've been doing this for about 6 years. Lots and lots of shows to listen to inspire you and help you grow. Anyway, it's been wonderful being with all of you today. May joy and serenity always be yours. Goodbye.
We hope you enjoyed today's programming. To learn more about Randy Fine, read her articles, or to make a counseling appointment with her, please visit randygfine.com. That's RANDIGFINE.com. Or visit her on Facebook at Randy G. Fine.